Welcome to Dr. Jeffrey Roth's Looking Good and Feeling Great podcast, live from Las Vegas, with his co-host, Daryl Craig Harris.
Hi, folks, and welcome. This is Dr. Jeffrey Roth, your board-certified plastic surgeon in Las Vegas, Nevada. And welcome back to the podcast. Can you stand it? We're still going at it.
We're doing well. You know, we're actually in over 30 countries from our last report and doing well. I think 200 and maybe 20,000 downloads, which is pretty good.
Which is pretty good for
not too shabby.
Listening to, so all this stuff. Yeah, so we're honored to have you. And again, even to start out with this, is if there's some topic that you want to go ahead and have us cover, by all means, get a hold of us. We actually look at our DMs. You can call us with the phone, et cetera, and we'll answer your question, and then we'll also bring it on. Because if you're having the question, somebody else probably is as well.
Right. And we've gotten a lot of questions, and we've actually made them topics on the podcast. One of the really a hot topic, and it always has been, is post-operative care.
Yeah. So, well, post-operative care is huge for a variety of reasons. And I learned this a long time ago. There's pre-op, there's the operating room, and there's post-operative care. And whether we're talking medicine and whether it's trauma, where you, pick these guys up off the street in the snow and the cold and everything else like that. And then what do you do in the back of the rig? Then you get them to the trauma center. What do you do in the resuscitation bay or the operating room? And then what do you do for them afterwards? And I learned that years and years ago is all of those three things are crucial for your survivability rates and then how good a survivor that is. In other words, is that somebody that can go back into society and, have a job and et cetera, and contribute? And there's huge variations. And a lot of that is predicated on pre, during, and post care. And that's trauma. I especially saw this in hand surgery because once upon a time, I was a hand surgeon and I was blessed to train with some of the best hand surgeons around, including late great Harry Bunke, who basically invented microsurgery. And everybody, that's not controversial. Everybody's, oh, no, it's Harry Bunke. So, but even in his office and his fellowship and everything else, it was really important to have pre, during, and post surgery. And their occupational therapists up there were second to none. They came around with us on rounds to go ahead and say, all right, well, this is the splint we're going to put on them. And this is going to be the post-operative occupational therapy we're going to give, et cetera. And I found that those folks that are with the program and go to OT afterwards, and they're the ones that get the good results. The ones that don't go to OT, and OT hurts, okay? OT's scar. Man,
yeah, it's not
hurts.
So much fun.
They're nice people, but they'll put a hurting on you.
Yeah.
And so, but the ones that do the OT, they go ahead and get good results. The ones that don't, you can be the best hand surgeon in the world, but it ain't going to come out really well. And so I said, all right, well, how am I going to translate that to plastic surgery? And we've seen this, especially in reconstructive surgery with flaps and different materials, et cetera, but especially in aesthetic surgery where I now live, is basically pre, during, and post. So pre, we talked about that to be safe and effective. Is the patient on blood thinners? What's the patient's life like? Do they live in a place that's conducive to healing, et cetera? Do they need to not be in that place? Do they need more help, et cetera? That sort of thing. And then we try to set up the practice as well to try to accommodate that. For example, availability. For us, we're talking about post-operative care now, right? So we assume that they were the right candidate. We assume that everything went great in the operating room. So now we're going to talk about post-operative care. And so what's the availability of the plastic surgeon? And when I showed up for medical school, is they hand you a pager, right? I said, wow, this is cool. I have a pager now. I'm important. I'm a somebody. Yeah. Until you realize that every time that little box goes off, nobody's asking you to lunch, okay?
Right.
It's all about, hey,
something
come
urgent.
And do this. Hey, go down to the ER and see this guy. Hey, go up to room 205 and put your finger up his butt. Okay, that's what the pager. Yeah, right. And so now, by the same token, is you don't feel dressed without it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like at Walkie's pager. I say that all the time before I leave, the house or any room. And the babysitter, I have a little one. The babysitter said pager. Says it's a phone. I'm like, oh, I guess it's a phone now. I go, yeah, okay, or a computer, whatever we got on the hip now.
We're no longer in the 80s.
No, I guess. So we have the Library of Congress on our hip, we walk around with nowadays.
Exactly.
Okay, so what's the availability? So the point I'm getting at is, all right, so I have this electric leash and it's okay. And that's part of the process. And my pager doesn't go off as much as it did, thank God, when I was doing trauma or hand or facial surgery or trauma and that sort of thing. But I was never the guy that the nurses had to chase. And maybe it was because I was raised by a nurse who beat that into me at an early age.
You better be available.
So, right. But I would rather put out small fires than big fires. I would rather have somebody come in and go, well, it's a little, I'm not really sure. Come in. I would prefer that over, well, I didn't want to bug you, but 6 months ago, and now you got an issue, right? So I'd rather put out little fires than big fires. We say in our practice that we're only a phone call away. And I tell my patients that my pager has worked at 2 a.m. for 30 years. So again, what would elicit a page would be a question, right? And I don't want any of my patients to lose sleep. I would rather them call me at 2 a.m, say, hey, I'm losing sleep because up, X, Y, and Z. They get an answer from me and they go back to sleep. Okay, that's the way it's supposed to work.
Right.
And I'd rather people reach out to me than Dr. Google. Okay, Dr. Google's not your friend, especially 2 a.m. Okay, I'd rather them get a hold of myself or my staff that have been trained to do this and basically answer the question and everybody goes back to sleep. So that's number one is availability, right? The other thing too is appointments afterwards. We see people a lot, probably too much. And you get these consultants, you're like, you see them how much? But typically we'll see folks at day 3 and then day 7. Typically at 3 weeks and 6 weeks, 3 months, 6 months, and then the year. Now, it depends on the patient and how well they're doing and what they had done, et cetera, et cetera. But we tend to see folks a lot. And also, again, if there's a issue or whatever, you call the office, you come in.
Okay? Right, and you catch it early, which is important.
Right. So again, if I'm physically in the operating room, okay, well, you know, we come in and the staff may go ahead and kind of triage it a little bit. I always talk to the office after the operating room, et cetera. So there's always availability around. The other thing is I'm a dinosaur. We've kind of established that. And I still, for my facelift and neck lift patient, will make a house call. The way I was trained, and it drives my wife crazy. Like, what do you mean you got to go? What? I said, yeah. I said, so if you're in Clark County, Nevada, which parenthetically is a big county,
by the way. Yeah, it's pretty big, actually.
So I looked it up. It's actually the same size landmass as New Jersey and Israel and Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Delaware combined. So in case you were wondering.
Yeah, for those that haven't been here.
Because
and it's very rural as well.
Yeah. So, and I actually talked to the sheriff about that. He says, you don't have to tell me, you know, so yeah. So it's a big county. It's not the biggest county in the country, but it's big. So having said that, if you're within Clark County and you have a facelift neck lift with me, I will find you and
I'll hunt you down.
I will find you. And so, yeah, I've been in Mesquite. I mean, it was actually very pretty up there. And I'll come to your house and I will take a look at your flaps and your incisions, make sure nothing weird or wacky is going on, and hopefully take out the drains. And that's just the way that I was trained, and I don't see a reason kind of why to change that.
Yeah.
And that's because I think that's important.
Well, and again, part of that too is you let the patients know that you're willing to go the extra mile. Their safety and their outcome is the most important thing, which is very important.
Right.
Of course.
So, yeah. And so that was, and actually I had a facelift patient whose husband was a doctor, and he was kind of like amazed at that as well. So that's what we do. So again, for us, aftercare is crucially important. And so what is aftercare, right? So aftercare can be anything from having somebody in your house, and you and I talked about this, is for the first 72 hours important to have somebody with you, right? Because especially if you're under general anesthesia, you're not going to be thinking right, et cetera, et cetera. If you have their stairs in the house, you do want people to get up and kind of piddle around a little bit and all of that. So you want somebody there. And if it's, you know, Las Vegas, so if there's not immediate family or friends, then yes, there are people for hire that you can go ahead and get that done. And so that's that part of it. And you also want people to have nutritious food. You want to make sure that they're drinking okay. You want somebody to make sure that they're taking their medicines on time, et cetera, et cetera. So that's that part. Also, with some of the procedures, massage will be important, right? Whether it's the breast stuff, whether it's breast augmentation or breast augmentation with lift or whatever the case may be, to go ahead and try to get the spasm of the pectoralis major muscles out sooner, try to go ahead and get some of the swelling out a little bit sooner. Our tummy tucks, we also send for lymphatic massage, which I think is really important. Now, we don't do that on day 3 because, ouch, that's going to hurt,
right?
Okay? Exactly. And we try to send them to legitimate places that actually know what they're doing, because you go online and you see people really mashing on these people on day 3 and serums coming out. Not a good scene.
Yeah.
But basically, what you do want is obviously have someone knows what they're doing, being able to go ahead and help that patient with the postoperative care. Compression garments. So compression garments are important to us after liposuction cases. So with liposuction, you go ahead and you instill this fluid, which we talked about, which cuts down on bruising, cuts down on pain. Terrific. And then we go ahead, we do liposuction. And then you want them to wear this compression garment to take away some of the swelling, et cetera. For us, that means you got to wear this thing 6 weeks around the clock and then 4 weeks halftime. And then when people start exercising and that sort of thing, they also really like wearing the compression garment as well. And as you and I have talked about, my cops and my firemen, the folks that have very physical jobs, they like wearing it underneath their uniform for about 3 months. Because those guys are always put, God bless them, they're always pushing or pulling or dragging something.
Absolutely. Right?
So in that regard, that's why compression garments are important. And oftentimes, again, this goes back to having people come in, is usually about the 3-4th week after liposuction, you'll downsize the compression garment because you do want them to have a certain amount of compression on there.
Right.
And so if they come back, 8 weeks later and it's you know, waffling in the breeze, that's not going to
that's not doing anything.
That's not going to help, right? Also then skincare, especially after facelifts or those sort of things, you want them to have good skincare. You want them to get good nutrition and nutrients into the face, into the wounds that you made. Wear sunscreen, big hats, et cetera, big Jackie O sunglasses and stuff for the blepharoplasty folks. Because again, here in Las Vegas, we have a UV index from 0 to 10. It's usually 100.
Yeah,
right?
It's crazy.
So, sun again, not your friend, especially postoperatively. And so we try to go ahead and get those folks, again, teeing them up to go ahead and get the best result possible. The other thing, we talked about a lot of physical stuff, but the other thing that we haven't talked about is some of the emotional stuff as well, which is, as you know, a big, big deal.
Big component.
Right? In fact, it's a well-known entity in plastic surgery that we actually have it in our book that we give the patient. So this is what to expect, et cetera. It's kind of this roller coaster of everybody goes ahead and gets excited and everybody's anxious and you made it through the surgery and now you're in wound healing mode, et cetera. And it's usually at that point where everybody gets a little bit down. Everybody gets a little bit blue. And that's a normal response.
Yeah, because it's a big emotional journey.
100%.
People, they know the physical, but they don't think about the mental aspect.
100%. And I've had a couple of buddies, and you work in Vegas, and I'm sure you do too, that have won the Super Bowl. Okay, and I'm sure you know a few of the Knights and everything else like that, that have won the Stanley Cup, go Knights. Okay, so, and the Aces too. Can't forget the Aces here in Las Vegas. Love them. All right, so this guy win the Super Bowl, right? And so what happens, right, is it's NFL and you're winning. You got a good team. You get the playoffs. We're going to the playoffs. You get to the championship game. Oh, my God, we're going to the Super Bowl. Oh, my God. So we go to the Super Bowl, right, and we win the Super Bowl, okay? So it's rings and it's money and it's Disneyland parades and blah, 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 blah. Well, the human body can't be cranked up that high that long. It's got to reset. So most of these guys get really depressed or down or blue, and they got to reset their emotions.
Yeah, it's sort of now what do I do?
So a lot of these guys now on vacation, you don't really hear from them. They're not at practice. Everybody's taking a big breath, okay? And then you can go ahead and kind of come back. Well, same thing with surgery is okay, well, I'm going to have surgery. Oh, we signed up. Okay, we're going to go. Today's surgery day. Oh, my gosh. Hey, everything went great. All right, gosh, I'm a little bit of pain. All right, a little bit of bruising. All right, but doc says I'm okay. Et cetera, et cetera. Again, you're going to have a little bit of blueness to you. On top of that is your body changed. We see this especially with male rhinoplasty over 30. They typically don't like their nose for about 3 weeks, even though you make them a gorgeous nose, et cetera, because they've been looking at that nose in that mirror for 30 plus years.
However many years.
And it's different. And your brain says, wait a minute, that's different. That doesn't belong there.
Yeah, your brain's trying to compute.
Right, it's trying to figure it out. And your brain has plasticity, and they've done the studies and everything. And then you, I don't know why, but usually about 3 weeks, all of a sudden, bing, oh, hey, that's my nose. Oh, that's a good-looking nose. Oh, that belongs there, right? Women, especially with breast stuff, especially, takes a year for them to finally kind of own it in as much as, oh, that's my bra size and that's my dress and that's how I look in my dress, et cetera, et cetera. So by the same token, things are going to settle, the scars are going to fade, et cetera. So there's an active process going on. But even with all of that and things stabilize, let's say at 10 months, still it's going to be a year plus that people are still sort of adjusting.
Or they're really, that's something we were going to talk about anyways, is the healing process, because people don't realize how long that process is.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. So to your point is, okay, what's the recovery time, doc? Right? And there are lots of folks advertising, lunchtime lipo or, go out to dinner breast dog or that kind of thing. And that may be true in those guys and gals' hands with a very select bunch of patients, and that's great. So it's been our experience that would anybody ask me, hey, so what's the recovery time? My answer is a year. I'm taking a mole off.
Yeah.
Because the surgical scars typically will look their most red at about 4 months and more white and linear and straight at about 10 months. Okay. So oftentimes people don't realize that. And by the way, that's what you can see on the outside. It's not what you're seeing on the inside, in the pocket of the breast dog, underneath the skin of the facelift, underneath the...
There's a lot of inward healing that's going on.
100%. Yeah. And especially tummy tucks, because that's a big area that we went ahead and moved around. And so that's the stuff that you can't see, you know, on the inside. And that's why in those procedures that have tension on them, facelifts, breast lifts, tummy tucks, you don't want people to do a lot of shifting tension on it. And you also don't want them to smoke and you want them to eat protein and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But yeah, no, I have people say, oh, doc, you know, I'm getting this thing on Friday. I'll be back to work Monday, right? No. Okay.
Yeah.
So, or again, we talked about this is, you know, do they have kids that are 1, 2, 3, 4 years
old? They're
picking
them up.
Are you going to pick them up? Yeah. Are you going to move it? I say, is grandma going to be there? Are you going to kind of herd them? You can't deadlift them out of the crib. That sort of thing. And people go, oh, yeah, gosh, I guess I got to do, oh, yeah, I got feeding time. So that is part of the recovery time as well. And they also ask, well, when my activity level? When can I go back to work? When can I do stuff? Typically from day 0 to 3 is kind of walk inside your house. Day 3 to 7, you go to the mailbox and back. Day 7, you can start walking around your neighborhood without your dog. And that's been an issue too. Oh, I walk my dogs, you know, five of them and they're, you know, 100
pounds
apiece.
You got a breast dog and the dog's pulling
you. Oh my God.
And,
so yeah, anything that can, blah, blah, blah. Don't ask. It's nuts. So there's that. And again, it depends. So straightforward breast dog, 22-year-old cocktail waitress, et cetera, usually back at the job at 10, you know, 10 days.
Yeah, because age plays a big factor.
Oh, sure, of course.
Age and health.
Right. So, yeah. So somebody had the big mommy makeover, breast dog lift, tummy tuck, 3 areas of lipo. Different story. Okay. Also, what do they do for a living? Okay. I always am concerned with my housekeepers and my nurses because they're all pecs and they're pushing and pulling and shoving. And my cops and my firemen. So the physical jobs and my laborers, of course. What do you do for a living? You know, are you a customer service agent at Pac Bell or do you have like a real physical type job? And again, we're used to athletes. As you know, 3 of my patients have been on the cover of Sports Illustrated, which used to be a thing. And now Sports Illustrated, it's kind of up there. It's kind of sad, but hopefully it'll all straighten out. But the athletes want to go back as fast as they can. And so sometimes I have to sit on them because they always get re-injured. I mean, how many times do we watch ESPN and, oh, well, he went back and now he really ruptured the tendon. Okay, now he's out for the season.
Because they're like thoroughbreds. They want to do what they want to do.
100%, right? Yeah. And you run around with a lot of them. You hang out with the Raiders and NFL guys and all that kind of stuff. And so we basically want them to get you to sit on them, but you have to let them into the gym to do something or they're going to lose their minds. Then we say, all right, we'll do a hybrid. You can go to the gym, but you can be on the recumbent bike, okay? You can walk and just walk, not heavy hand. Go ahead and do those sorts of things for those folks so they can at least get their head as well as their body sort of, you know, back in the game. But those activities also be guided by how they're doing. That's, again, why we see them so often. All right, good. Well, you're looking pretty good. Now you can do legs in the gym. Oh, on the machines. Okay, now you can do biceps and triceps with 3-pound weights. And they look at me like I'm nuts. And I'm like, just to get your muscle memory back, and then you can start stacking weight on top of it, right? Mm-hmm. Not our first rodeo. We've done this before. And we've taken care of, again, you know, everybody from bodybuilders to Olympic athletes to boxers, lots of boxers, and all of that. The other thing is back to work. Depends on what you do, you know. And we had one gal, and she was great. A young gal, breast dog, and she worked at patient. And she worked at Buffalo Wild Wings, right? And she said, well, you've been to Buffalo Wild Wings. Of course. Who hasn't, right? And she said, well, yeah. So you bring out the wings, and then you have all these little sauces, right? I said, yeah. She says, well... She says, the funny thing is I'm back at work and everything's fine, and blah, 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 I'm running around a little slower, and that's okay. And she says, but you go in the back, and you're the server, and you want to pour the sauces in the little cups. Well, they have this machine that you have to, like, press down.
Oh.
You know, when you take your hand, you press down the machine, right. And it dispenses it. Dispense, dispense, dispense. She says, I can't do that motion yet. You know, so she says she has to get some of the other folks to go ahead and kind of press down on this machine to dispense the secret sauces or whatever like that, and then bring them at the table. So it's kind of like you wouldn't have thought of that would be an issue,
right,
you know, going back. And I tell also the servers and the cocktail waitresses and stuff, less drinks, more trips, you know, back and forth.
Because they're carrying the heavy trays.
Everything else. And again, we're talking Las Vegas. Also, try to be T-Rex arms as much as you can and move your feet, not your waist. And again, that's usually for breast work or tummy work, especially breast lifts, because the incisions are on tension. So again, you have to modify sometimes what you're doing for your particular occupation or what that might be. But we try to talk about this too to make sure that they can get enough time off, that they can get enough support from family members or other folks. And then also, when you re-enter the workforce, can you do your job? And can you do it really well, et cetera, et cetera? And some folks are just different. I mean, our flight attendants, FAA regulations say that they have to be able to pick up 40 pounds because that's how much that window exit is, and kind of throw it out into the wing, et cetera. So that's one of those things that we go ahead and talk about at the very beginning when they come in, is as we talk about, okay, what's going on in your life? What's going on in your universe? And so that's important preoperatively, intraoperatively, and then postoperatively, like we spoke about today. All of those things are really, really important. And I think that the patient has to go ahead and be on board, as well as the doctor's office, as well as the OR staff, to go ahead and give somebody their best outcome.
Yeah. Do you find, because you were talking about male patients versus female patients, do you find a difference in the recovery? Is it more challenging with male patients?
Well, that's a great question.
To get them to follow the rules?
No, they're usually pretty good. Yeah. As far as if they're committed, they're committed, you know, and they'll do this. And usually, again, we get about 11% of our patients are male, which is about the national average. Yeah, there's a couple things you got to be a little more careful of with men patients. They tend to bleed a little bit more on facelifts and that sort of thing. So there's a couple little nuances. Mm-hmm. But having said that, some guys are a little more leery of being in a plastic surgeon's office.
Right.
But once they're there and they're like, okay, I'm here. Here's what I'm here for. Here's my goal.
I've committed.
Here's my goal. You know, and sometimes there's a little bit of that, really, should I be here? Is it worth it? But we talk through that. I'm going to go, look, here's your options. Look, it's up to you. And they say, oh, okay. So, all right, if those are my options, okay, I'll do that then. So once they've, like anything else, been educated and they figure it out and they've had their questions answered, and it's not a black box anymore, it's not a dark room that you don't know what's in it, they're like, oh, well, this is what we're going to do? Oh, well, I like that. I said, so I'm going to go ahead and get rid of the love handles that I've been working my butt off in the gym for 20 years. And you're going to tell me that in an hour of operating stuff like that, I can get rid of. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I like that.
Yeah, looks good. How's Tuesday?
Okay. Exactly.
So a lot of, we get a lot of that is basically, all right, they're kind of curious, apprehensive. We get through that. We answer the questions they want answered. Like, ah, okay, now I get it. You know, and then they're like, and once they commit, yeah, they commit. And they're, by and large, I've had some really, really good patients. This is, yeah, they're typically, most guys are with the program. Those guys, like anything else, those guys that are with the program, pre, during, post, get better results.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, again, too, it's a significant financial commitment and a time commitment. So you want to, sure. I'm sure they want the best outcome as well.
Of course. And the funny thing, too, is getting the guys is we see that especially with the folks that come in for Botox and fillers and that sort of thing. And usually the 50-ish, your 40, 50-ish guys, and they come in and they say, yeah, you know, I'm a salesman, doc. I said, yeah. And they say, yeah. I said, I'm competing with these 20-year-olds all the time. And they're saying, hey, Pops, how come you look tired today? I'm like, tired? I just outsold you 2-1 at the quarter, right? So, but they come to me and they say, hey, doc, put the Botox and filler in, stuff like that, because I feel better about me and I feel more confident. And sales, as you know, is all about confidence. And they tell me that they sell more stuff, whether it's cars or whatever. And they say, so the ROI on you is pretty good. I'm like, okay, as long as I'm making that way, okay, good. So, and they keep coming back. And then they tell their friends, which is great. So they may have a little bit different objectives, or they may have different goals, but by and large, it's kind of the same thing, is, you know, some improvement, not to look goofy, not to look crazy, not to look anything else, but basically kind of just look freshened up and natural. And that's what we try to provide and pride ourselves on.
Yeah. Do you find that most patients, once they've had the procedures, they come back with a more confident feel when you see them post-op? I mean, obviously, like you said, it takes a while for a recovery.
Sure. I mean, that's the reason why I put my hard hat on in the morning and my lunch pail and I go to work, is the ability to make a difference in somebody's life. And the classic Hollywood moment, and you and I have talked about this, is otoplasty in a young girl, typically, right? Because otoplasty is where your ears stick out, and they've been teased, and you know, and Dumbo, and all the awful, right? And they don't want to play sports because they don't want to put their hair back in a ponytail, and all of it, all of it. And with one operation, you go to the operating room, you go one operation, and you put the ears back where they're supposed to be. And there's the Hollywood moment where you're in there. It's post-op day three. You take the bandages off and the circular bandage, and you take it off and off and off and off. And you finally take that off, and you finally take the gauze off, and then you hand them the mirror, right? And they look, and they start crying, and mom starts crying, and all of that. So with one operation, that's the dramatic Hollywood part of it. But with one operation, you can really change something that will impact them for a very long time. And that, to me, is why I get up and go to work in the morning. And I, that's the part that I really love, is to be able to go ahead and make a big impact.
Yeah, so that's awesome. And yeah, you have a lot of great patients and you have a great team, which is also very important.
I've been absolutely blessed with that. And again, getting back to what we talked about, you know, pre-operatively and talking to the patients, getting them in, answering their questions during the operating room, again, a terrific operating room staff. And also that doesn't happen in a vacuum as well. You have to have administration over the surgery center or the operating room, wherever you are, and vendors and everything else. So again, and I say this all the time, I said, look, if, you know, as I'm leaving the OR, they say, well, I'm just an tag, or I'm just an, or I'm just a, there's no just a, okay? This is a team effort. And if the guy pushing the mop doesn't come in that day and do his job, I can't do my job. And I used to be the guy pushing the mop. So yes, I get it. And, you know, you and I talk about football and such all the time. If you have 11 Tom Brady's on the field, you're going to lose every time,
right?
Right, because you need an offensive lineman. You need
everybody
wide receivers.
Plays the role. Every, yeah.
You need all these the guys that are doing their roles, and we all have a role to play. The support I get is terrific, and that allows me to go ahead and do what I think is pretty good work. And then aftercare, which we talked about this whole session, for me is really important as well. So before, during, and after, it's all about teamwork. It's all about supporting the patient and getting the best outcomes.
Absolutely. Dr. Roth, tell people how they can get in contact with you.
Sure. So we're all over the place. Basically, is we're on the web at www.jjrothmd.com. It's JJROTHMD.com. We are also on everywhere, including all the social media outlets, including Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, the podcast, which you found us. And we're on all the major outlets for that as well. So the other thing too is with all of that, we try to educate all of those platforms. We try to get good information out there and try to educate. And so if you want to reach out to us on any of those platforms, please do. And we'll see if we can get that particular topic on.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Please like and subscribe to the podcast to hear future episodes. And all of our past episodes are also available online. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And we'll talk at you soon.
Thank you so much for joining us. For further information, please visit the podcast website link for Dr. Jeffrey Roth. See you next time.